kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino. Pakinggan niyo pa ang kwento sa sbs.com.au/filipino.
I live just to the right of me is a volcano. Like my morning view, like I have my coffee and I look out there and it's a volcano. And then to the left of me is the ocean and I'm looking at a white sandbar and it's like just either side of me. So it's beautiful. It's little. Not everyone can live here.
Pinanganak sa Camiguin, lumaki sa Australia, at bumalik at permanente nang nakatira sa Camiguin. Yan ang naging landas ng free diver at animal advocate na si Zoe Palliere patungo sa isang simple, mapayapa at tahimik na buhay.
I was born in the Philippines, in Camiguin Island, and then left when I was like 4 or 5 years old. My parents took me back to Australia. So my dad's Australian, my mum's Filipina. Went back to Australia for my education. And then my entire childhood, I would go back to Camiguin for Christmas for like 6 to 8 weeks during the Christmas holidays. So I still kept that like connection to Camiguin, especially.
I see. So let's just go back, I guess, to your stay here in Australia. So growing up, because you mentioned that your dad is Australian, but your mom is Filipino. Because with biracial kids, we always get this. They always say that there was a confusion growing up. Like, who am I? Who am I really? Where do I fit in? Did you have that? Did you grow up with that as well?
1,000%. It was too Asian to be Australian, but too white to be Filipino. And then like my family in the Philippines would be like, prop me up, being like this light skinned little girl. And like, of course it's nice. You feel a bit spoiled, but at the same time, you don't feel like you fit in. Like it was very othering. You know, I was a kid and like people would take pictures of me like at waterfalls because I'm a little bit different. And it's like, at that age, you just want to fit in. You don't want to be a little bit different. You want to be the same as your cousins or your neighbors. And then in Australia, it can be brutal. it can be very brutal, but I had a good group of friends. But it was funny because I tried really hard to bury the Asianness, the Filipino-ness of me. I feel like there were some Filipinos that I grew up around that like kept their Filipino friends and they kind of stuck in their Filipino circle. I was like, I'm going to fit in. I'm going to be white. Like, mom, please don't make me Filipino food for school. I'm going to eat a sandwich. my mom has like a very big community of like Filipinos that, you know, she would spend her weekends with and party and karaoke. And they have like Filipino daughters or half Filipino daughters. And I would see them be like, they're so much more like proud to be Filipina. Or they kind of embraced it more. And that was when I started to like really feel that guilt. And it wasn't until like, I guess my early 20s where I was like, yeah, I'm Filipino. What of it? Like,
It was in your late 20s that you felt the urge to return, to go back to Camiguin. So what was it? Because you said you were in corporate. What made you decide to do that?
I mean, I left corporate to travel. So there was a big part of me that wanted to just escape the 9 to 5 that everyone wants to escape from. But I fell into opportunities that let me do that. I know I'm very lucky. Like not everyone can quit their 9 to 5 and backpack for 5 years and make that work. I worked remotely in marketing still. It wasn't a lot, but it allowed me to travel Southeast Asia and mostly the Philippines. Cause you know, the dollar. but then after 5.5 years of travel, I got burnout. So I was tired of moving around and I craved community. I guess I've always craved community from a young age. But I craved settling down and having friends and being able to like get coffee with my best friend just down the road, that kind of thing. And for so long, like 5.5 years, I wasn't able to do that. You make friends traveling and you could be the best of friends for a week and never see them again. So There was such a huge part of me that just wanted to settle down. And then I was like, okay, well, where can I do that? Because I don't want to settle back in Australia. Like, I love Australia, don't get me wrong. My parents are still there. I still have dogs there. It's still one of my homes, but it wasn't what I was looking for. And I wanted, yeah, that simple life. I didn't want to live for the weekend, and, wait for my annual leave to experience life. So I was like, okay. I'm half Filipina. I still have family in Camiguin. I'm biased, but the most beautiful island. I was like, okay, this is where I'm going to settle down.
What is the difference between living there and living here in Australia? Because I'm sure the disparity is huge, but what made coming in more attractive?
For me, it's definitely like the laid back style of living here. So my dad was the same. So my dad grew up in Adelaide and then like lived all across Australia. He's very, very Australian. But he came to Cemegan in the early 90s and he immediately fell in love with it and said it was like living in the 60s and the 70s all over again. Like it was just super laid back. Not a lot has changed from the early 90s to now. We might have like a 4-lane highway around the entire island, but I can still drive around the island in 2 hours. I live just to the right of me is a volcano. Like my morning view, like I have my coffee and I look out there and it's a volcano. And then to the left of me is the ocean and I'm looking at a white sandbar and it's like just either side of me. So it's beautiful. It's little. Not everyone can live here. Like, that's for sure. You have to be comfortable slowing down, and accepting that, like, it might take you all day to do your groceries because you can't just go to Woolies or Coles and get everything you need. I need to go to 10 different stores and the market, and there's one guy that makes bread. And so it's being comfortable with that. And then really embracing it. So I like the slow living. I like being able to walk to work in, I mean, I work from home, but my boyfriend runs the dive shop, so I can walk there in 10 minutes and then walk along the beach every day and swim every day. And it's just, yeah. And Australia is beautiful, don't get me wrong, but you still have to work, the 9 to 5, to make ends meet. And okay, you can go to the beach on the weekend, but I can go to the beach in the mornings and the afternoons and
Along with moving to come again, you found free diving.
yeah, so it was when I was backpacking, and obviously like going around all the islands and snorkeling and like this curiosity, like I just wanted to go a bit deeper and like you want to be able to swim with the turtles, but they're a few meters deep, so it felt like just not enough being able to swim on the surface. And then I started seeing more on like social media, people free diving. I was like, oh, what's that? So I did my beginner's free diving course and fell in love with it. So for me, like, yeah, it's the turtles and the ocean and everything, but it's also the quiet. Like, it's so quiet. My mind is quiet. The only thing that you're focused on is like your body and being down there and your breath. And yeah, so that's how I started. But yeah, now I'm a 36 meter diver, which is exciting. So to start with, like I wanted to go 3 meters to see turtles, and now I go 36 meters and see nothing. Not all free divers live for the number. There's some that definitely do. I don't live for it, but it's definitely a motivator. So it's exciting every time I reach a new PB. And yeah, it's all about the peace and just seeing what my body can do. And it's so funny because growing up, like I was not athletic at all. I would skip every PE class I could. And then, like, I'm still not going to run, but I'll dive.
Maybe we can go to your other passion, which is barcada. So, can you tell me more about your compassion for street dogs, street animals, and wanting to do this foundation as well for them?
So I always wanted to. Like I mentioned, I grew up between Australia and the Philippines, in Cemegan. So in Australia, we treat our pets like family. I literally have a tattoo of my dog and another one here and my cat on the back of my arm. Like my pets are my life. And then I remember being a kid and coming back to Cemegan and just seeing like the street dogs in the most horrific conditions and seeing some really awful abuse. Like I won't go into it, but like I saw some pretty harrowing things that made me want to do something about it. My dad taught me to love animals, especially dogs. I had my first Doberman when I was like 2 years old. And I've had dogs my entire life growing up. I'm an only child, so they were like proxy siblings to me. So I have this like huge love for dogs, and then cats, that came later in life. And then I actually started Barcarta before I moved to Cemegan full time. So I was traveling, and spending more time in Cemegan than I ever had growing up. So I'd be there every few months or so. And I met a girl in Bacolod, and so her name is Malu. She runs Portion Project, and she is one of my like biggest inspirations. And she is also in her like mid late 30s, I think. And just one girl doing it all. She has one of the biggest shelters in the Philippines, in Bacolod and Manila. And so I got talking to her in Bacolod, and I was like, "How'd you start? How'd you do it? Like, I just feel like there's no like right time." And she's like, "There's never a right time to start a not-for-profit. This is going to drain you. Like, but if you're passionate about it, then just start." So, like a month after having that conversation with her, I rescued some puppies, and that was it. And to begin with, I was just doing it out of like my family home in Cemegan. And then I had people like cousins that lived in the home and caretakers. So when I wasn't there, they helped. And my yaya, so like my nanny growing up, she also helped me like rehabilitate the dogs and everything, and it became like a family effort. And then a great uncle of mine, so he was like my grandfather, he had some land in Cemegan, and he gave me about 1,000 square meters to fence and start my shelter.
You have so much affinity for animals, and then you see the abuse, and then you just do what you can. Like, how do you push through?
So there's this concept in like healthcare workers, and people in like shelters and stuff called compassion fatigue, and it can get to you where it's actually the opposite. It breaks you to a point where you stop caring, or not stop caring, but you don't have the like capacity within yourself to care as much anymore. And I've always tried to avoid that. And the best way that I can do it is not rescuing every single dog that I see. Like my island, it's very small. It's like 64 kilometers around the entire thing, but it's full of dogs. And if I was going to rescue every single one of them, like I'd absolutely get compassion fatigue. So it's really for me like the most like dire straits. Like if I see a dog, I'm like, okay, if you're gonna die and I like if I don't get you and you're gonna die, then I'll bring you in. And it's not rescuing the cutest puppies that you see. Like it's being able to say no when you can. And same with cats and So being able to kind of put that boundary in place, because when I first started the shelter, I would be like, "Oh, you're coming home. You're coming home." And I wanted to save them all. And then I realized I couldn't, and I don't have the financial means to do it. So I do get donations, but for the most part, it's self-funded. But honestly, I'm living the dream. I'm really lucky. I know I am. I just want to keep living like this.
Nice yung bang makinig na iba pang kwento na tulad ito? Makinig sa Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, o sa iba pang podcast apps.